You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 141 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It's actually a lot earlier than normal on this fine Sunday. Life gets in the way. I have something later on today. My guest today is busy, and it's one of all those things where I know it's not the season right now, but stuff still happens. But we found time, and joining me as often is the great Eric Cole. What's up, man?
Hey, man, thanks for having me. I'm glad we kind of found a way to make this work today. We have some stuff to talk about, and it's a pretty exciting start to the offseason, to be sure.
Yeah, we do, and it's a little bit newsy today, I will say. We decided, because of our time constraints, that we're not going to do the full-blown lineup review. There is one more to do. That's the last one we'll have to do, and at some point in the next couple of weeks, we'll definitely do that. But we'll talk about a lot of guys that are position players today, so it's almost like it's going to be that. But so everybody knows, so Eric and I don't go for an hour and a half, because we don't actually have an hour and a half to do this podcast today. So with that said, let's get into what happened. I mean, it's kind of funny. I say news. There isn't anything that's like crazy, but at the same time, there was stuff that's happening. You know, the GM meetings have now come and gone. There are a couple of interesting quotes from Anthopoulos coming out of that. No actual moves. Very few things around the league, but the hot stove is like somewhat lit, I guess.
It's interesting, because when we had the winter meeting, not the winter meetings, the GM meetings this week, you know, it's Anthopoulos is really good about seemingly playing things close to the vest. And like, you almost have to take like half the things he says with a grain of salt, and you have to kind of pick your poison, because it's difficult to kind of suss out exactly what the Braves are planning to do, because ultimately they have enough payroll space and enough prospect capital that they can kind of do what they want. But once they pick a path, they're going to have to kind of go down that path quickly, because other teams are going to be like, okay, well, now we know that the Braves are going to be not going to be in play for these guys and are going to be in play for these guys. And you have to kind of make those choices quickly. Once you kind of start, like, you know, if you acquire a catcher, whether that's in free agency or via trade, things like that. And, you know, it seems like right now they're focusing on trade, so they can kind of figure out where they're going to spend their free agent dollars most wisely. And that's going to be an interesting choice, because you have the JT Realmuto's out there. That rumor's been floating out there for a long time. Whether or not the Marlins are willing to make a deal, or at least deal with the Braves on terms that the Braves are willing to deal with them on, is going to be kind of once the Braves kind of sort that situation out, is going to determine whether or not they can make a move for a guy like maybe even like a Corey Kluber, or, you know, who was, you know, James Paxton, who was made available more recently. And you're kind of having to figure out, the Braves are sort of having to figure out who's actually available on the trade market. Because I think they would prefer to do a trade first, because that way they can kind of figure out exactly where they can spend their dollars, because they could find themselves in a situation where a guy was available for trade and they would have been able to save the money would have been better spent elsewhere and things like that. So I think what's going to end up happening is, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to see the Braves make a trade before we kind of see any free agent signings. The rest of it will kind of sort itself out from there.
That makes sense. And I think, you know, what you said rings true. And the fact that just free agency usually takes a while. That's kind of just the way this stuff works. Maybe you get one or two stray deals at the beginning, but for the most part, a lot of guys normally end up waiting for a while. And I know they're allowed to sign right now. A couple guys have signed, but they're definitely lower level players, and normally that stuff kind of waits a minute. So trades, I mean, Anthopoulos did say this week, and I quote, this is from a story from Gabe Burns of AJC. Anthopoulos said that he's, quote, they're waiting to spend... Sorry, they're spending the bulk of our time here on trades, and here is at the GM meetings, and he says we're not spending time on free agents. So that kind of tells you where they are right now. Of course, I think it needs to be said, I think you mentioned this as well, what Anthopoulos says publicly does not necessarily mean that that's all that's happening. Like, people, right, I think, take it as gospel a lot of times when guys say publicly, and I understand that, but They're under no obligation to tell you everything that's going on. So I would definitely take everything with a grain of salt. That's not a shot at any of the reporting, because the reporting, they're just telling you what Anthopoulos is saying publicly. But I think people just like close the book on things. We're talking about one other thing later on in the podcast about some comments that he made about the infield that had the same reaction. It was like, all right, book closed. I'm like, no, I wouldn't say that necessarily. Like, it may be likely, and you should take it with some sort of importance of what Anthopoulos says, but at the end of the day, he doesn't have to tell everybody what he's going to do.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem with the free agent market specifically is that you have two big free agents in Manny Machado, which is an infielder, and Bryce Harper, that's an outfielder, and the teams that are looking to fill one of those two spots, or both in some cases, they're all going to be trying to figure out exactly whether or not what their chances are of filling that void. So, like, a lot of these choices that the Braves would have are being impacted by kind of the availability of maybe they're not interested in Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, but a lot of those guys who are below, like, kind of in tiers below, they're going to be kind of waiting to see who they need to be negotiating with. And that kind of just has the ripple effects. And until one or both of those guys sign, we might see the free agent market being a little bit slow. And I think you're absolutely right. The comments about the infield, you know, kind of they feel set in the infield. I don't think they feel compelled to, like, you know, they have to get the best guy out there right now, because that there's a big hole there. Because I think they feel reasonably comfortable. If they were to go in the 2019 with the current infield, it wouldn't be, you know, they would be fine. But I mean, there's a lot of big names that have been floated out there. I mean, we just heard that like Chris Bryant's being floated around right now. You know, who knows what's going on with Nolan Arenado, you know, in terms of when that he can actually sign an extension with the Rockies. And if he isn't, the Rockies could feasibly move him. And the Braves would be negligent to not check in on those guys, because, I mean, those are two MVP caliber players. And if you can bring those in, that would be interesting, depending on the price and all that stuff. So I think they're checking in on all their options. I just think that, and I think it's more likely that we're going to see a trade. But, you know, in terms of, like, you know, what the Braves are, like, completely closing the book on in terms of upgrades and things like that, Alex Anthopoulos doesn't strike me as the guy who's not willing to at least talk to have those conversations. And people who are thinking that, you know, they're not going to go after any other options other than what's been publicly stated is a little bit silly.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And, you know, just for clarity's sake, you know, on the record, Anthopoulos said, and I quote, "The one thing I can say is I feel like we're set in the infield," end quote. He talked about how Camargo was amazing this year and all that stuff. You know, that's definitely true. He was very, very good this season. It's not all Camargo either. Obviously, Swanson's been a topic of conversation. I think we'd all be pretty surprised if Albies and Freeman were not around. But the guys on the left side, I think, you know, I take Anthopoulos at his word to some degree in that I think they will be okay coming back with this starting group in the infield. I also don't think that, as you mentioned, if there's another option that presents itself, part of the value of having a guy like Camargo is that he can play shortstop or he can play somewhere else and play kind of all over the place. So if it's like if a situation presents itself where a guy falls in your lap that's a third baseman, that's a star, or a near star, you would want to be open to that. But I do think that Anthopoulos is probably okay bringing the band back, so to speak, on the infield. He's been pretty candid talking about how core outfield is a spot, and that's, of course, the Marquez spot. He's now a free agent. And catcher, those are the two spots that he keeps saying on the record are the spots where they're looking, and that makes sense because those are the obvious spots where they absolutely have to do something. Marquez is not, I mean, for all the discussion about him, we'll come back to him later, of course. He's going to be a free agent regardless, so it's not like a situation where you can automatically bring him back. Like, it's not a situation where you have someone in right field or left field if you want to move Acuña to right field. They have to do something. Even if that was Marquez, which I would not love, and we'll come back to that, as I mentioned, that's still a move you have to make. Like, they only have one catcher. They only have one starting caliber core outfielder right now in Ronald Acuña, so they have to do stuff there, and that's why I think that's part of the reason why Anthopoulos is comfortable talking about those spots.
Because it's obvious.
Whereas on the infield, even if he was looking for an infield upgrade, I'm not sure he would say that, just because you have guys who were starters this year who performed pretty well, especially in the case of Camargo. He was very, very good this year. You don't want to say in November that you're looking for the infield and then not sign someone in the infield and have to deal with all the fallout of you saying that and then not doing anything about it. Whereas they have to do something in the corner outfield and the catcher. So, like, there's no downside to him saying that those are spots where they're looking to upgrade because they have to do something. That's kind of where I am with it now. I think the infield might be set. He might be telling the truth with that, and they might not actually do anything there. But I think if somebody calls about, you know, the guys you mentioned, Bryant or Arenado, or if Josh Donaldson wants to sign him in Atlanta for a reasonable price, they're going to think about that at the very least.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, and again, I don't think they're pressured to make those moves. So I don't think you're going to see any particularly bad trades or anything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that I don't, and I think that just Anthopoulos is trying to make sure that he has the leverage where he wants it in those conversations. Being like, look, I don't have to make this deal. I can say no thanks, and then we can go into the 2019 season, and our infield will not be a problem. Now, if you're wanting to, you know, get rid of a guy like a Chris Bryant or Arenado, or, you know, talking to Josh Donaldson's agent, you know, if you're wanting $20 million on a one-year deal, that's probably not going to work. But if you're wanting to come down, you know, it's not that we don't like you and yet you couldn't help this club. So it's a question of leverage in the media and things like that, and how comments are taken and things like that. So it's an interesting dynamic in terms of how Anthopoulos is using the media, because that this front office does seem to be pretty tight-lipped in terms of what they're, you know, what's leaking out and what's not. We're getting some hints here and there from Bowman's reporting, but other than that, we just don't really know. And I'm fine with that, because ultimately there's reasons to kind of keep things close to the vest until you kind of make your move.
Yeah, and you know, listen, this has been a very tight front office, as you mentioned, and you know, you remember the Dodgers, the big Dodgers trade, how it was not reported by anyone, and
the Matt Kemp trade came out of nowhere. Yeah.
So like, I mean, it's not all going to be that way, because you're dealing with so many parties where the other team can leak stuff, agents can leak stuff, etc. But I think Anthopoulos is okay not leaking things. I think that's pretty clear at this point. So you kind of have to go with what's been said publicly, but it's not ever going to be gospel. And I think everyone that even covers the team would acknowledge that as well. The one, yeah, I think you mentioned it tangentially a few minutes ago, was the Real Muto stuff. That was the one interesting bit of reporting. That there was a report from Craig Mish this week that reported that there was a, quote, strong offer on the table, end quote, from the Braves for Real Muto, which Anthopoulos later told the beat writers of the Braves that offer was not in existence and that wasn't true. That's one situation where you kind of don't know what to believe there. Anthopoulos was pretty clear that there wasn't an offer on the table, so I kind of tend to believe that, to be honest with you, but at least was out there. That was the one guy they've actually been, like, by a national voice tied to. You know, I don't really have anything to take away, because we talked about Real Muto just a lot, but that was the one thing that was actually sort of out there, even if Anthopoulos did dispute it.
I think what happened there, I mean, Chris, Craig Mish has been pretty connected with what's been going on with the Marlins, a lot of their moves that have, you know, happened previously, the Ozuna trade and all those other ones. Like, he was kind of right in on those moves as they were kind of happening. I think what happens is that what we had heard is that there was a clear discussion at the trade deadline about whether it was Mike Soroka and Austin Riley, or, you know, some combination of a big starting pitching prospect and Austin Riley, or, you know, something like basically two top 100 guys, one position player, one pitcher, as kind of the starting point for those conversations. And I think that it's very possible the Braves and the Marlins kind of touch base, like, hey, is this a starting point for a conversation down the road?
I'm sure they've talked. Like, I'm confident about that.
Yeah, and I think that they hark back to that offer. And I mean, and that is a good. That's a good offer for the Marlins. You know, two top 100 guys would be better than most of the returns they've gotten for their other players that they've gotten rid of, Yelich and Ozuna and all those guys. So, you know, there's real conversations to be had, and I'm sure that they kind of continued the conversations that were from the trade deadline. I don't think that necessarily means, like, the Braves came to the table and were like, we want to make this offer, these players for Real Muto, say, you know, yes or no, you know what I mean? It wasn't anything like that. I think it was just kind of a continuation of those conversations, and it caused a little bit of confusion as to kind of, you know, was there a new offer and all this other stuff and what players are involved and all that. I think it's more of a continuation of, is this this general framework going to be something that you're going to be interested in having further conversations about? That's just my general impression.
That makes sense. I mean, we don't know. We're not in the room, but I do think that timeline would make some sense, and there's no reason why they wouldn't have talked. You know, having a firm offer on the table can be semantics. I think that's something that Anthopoulos can say with a straight face and probably mean it, because of the fact that maybe he doesn't think that there's actually an offer on the table, where I'm sure they've actually talked about Real Muto, just because it's an obvious fit by both sides. They were just at the GM meetings. It would kind of go beyond reason for me that they hadn't talked at all, if that makes sense. But an offer is different. A firm offer is different than actually just having discussions. So both sides could be right to some degree there. It's just kind of a rough semantics discussion. And we talked plenty about that. I mean, I think we both think he'd be very, very good in Atlanta, but at the same time, you don't want to overpay. My guard is up for a catcher always, and I keep saying that, and I will keep saying that. Even if they make that deal, he's very, very good, and he's the guy you would want to trade for if you're going to trade for someone, because he's very good and pretty young. But I just am a little bit wary about catchers. But if you're going to do it, he's probably the one to do. So I know I'm sort of sitting on the fence there, but I just, there's a point where I wouldn't do it, but there's a point where I would. And I think my point is lower than some just because of the catcher stuff. But if he still, if he performs in the way that he's capable of over the next couple of years, then it's obviously a value that you want.
Yeah. If he, with two more years on his deal, I mean, he is young. So, I mean, if they're asking for four top 100 guys, like you have to draw, you draw the line. But, you know, if it's, you know, two top 100 guys and maybe like a third smaller piece or something like that, you have a conversation because he is one of the best catchers in the league and he has not had any injury issues. He has like a strong arm. He'll be able to, you know, kind of control the running game a bit. The framing stuff isn't quite as good, but maybe that the Field Braves can feel like they could improve that. And at the plate, I mean, there's not a better offensive catcher in the league right now. I mean, there's a couple guys in that same conversation, but I mean, he is a very, very good player. And if you're going to make a good offer for a catcher, he's the guy to do it. But you have to draw a line somewhere because it's only 2 years of control. Catchers have, like, you know, there's injury issues sometimes that they, you know, the bat drops off and things like that, and they don't necessarily last as long. So you draw the line somewhere. But I mean, in terms of like making a strong offer, I'm all for it. Just don't go crazy.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we'll come back to that if there are more rumblings in the future. All right. Well, two bits of award news that happened over the last week. I think when we recorded a week ago, we did not know the Gold Glove winners, and they came out. Two non-surprises and one surprise. It was Freddie Freeman, Ennio Inciarte, and Nick Markakis winning Gold Gloves. Freeman and Inciarte, not surprises. You know, Freeman led the league in both UZR and DRS this year at first base. It was not a surprise. I wouldn't have been blown away if he didn't win, but at the same time, he's definitely deserving. Inciarte, I actually thought that Kane was going to win and probably should have won, but Inciarte is obviously tremendous, and he was basically the second best guy pretty clearly according to the metrics, and he has the history, so no issue there really. And with his win, first of all, before we get to Markakis, what did you think about Freeman and Inciarte winning? Either of those surprise you at all?
I thought I was with you. I thought Kane was going to win, and it was because Kane had been so good defensively, especially in terms of like defensive runs saved and all that stuff. All three of those guys kind of passed the eye test. You know what I mean? Like they have like highlight reel plays. They do a lot of things well defensively out in center field. So again, it wasn't like crazy to me that Ender won. I thought it was a reasonably close race. I just thought that Kane was slightly better, but I also think that Ender like made a lot of things. Both in big moments and also he graded really well in all the metrics this year. So it's hard to argue with that one. Freeman, I thought he was the best defensive first baseman this year. And he looked better over there, and he started showing out on the defensive metrics more this year. And more importantly, some of the guys that would normally kind of be his competition, whether it be Goldschmidt or Votto, had down defensive years. I thought he was the most deserving candidate, and I was glad he won. We can talk about Nick Markakis, but I don't want to like dwell on that whole situation too much because it kind of speaks to my infuriation with like the position awards in general.
Yeah, we're going to do those kind of together because Markakis also won Silver Slugger, so we'll group those together. One final note on center field. Kane, we both talked about him a second ago, but he actually was leading all center fielders in both UZR and DRS, which is why I thought he was going to win. But again, Ender is an elite defensive player, and no issue at all with him winning. His glove is not in question. He's tremendous in the outfield. As for Markakis, we both said a lot on this, I'm sure, and various platforms. Gold Glove was a surprise win. I do think I actually understand the argument for Markakis for the Gold Glove. Silver Slugger, not so much, and we'll come back to that. But I understand the Markakis argument because of the fact that there wasn't an obvious candidate. I do think that both the other finalists, Jason Heyward and John Jay, are far better defenders than Markakis, but Heyward played about 500 less innings than Markakis. I thought that Brian Anderson should have been nominated and wasn't, and I thought he probably should have won it and wasn't even nominated from the Marlins. So I do understand why Markakis won the Gold Glove to some extent, because he played every day, he played so many more innings, and the guys who were nominated with him, were not playing every single day in right field. So I understand that argument. With that said, he was about dead even in terms of basically league average and outs above average. He was a slight positive in DRS and UZR, which is an upgrade on what he's been. So, you know, credit to Markakis, who was better defensively this year than he has been the last few years. But he was fifth among right fielders in the National League in DRS, fifth in UZR. That's not really the profile for someone who wins a Gold Glove most of the time. But, you know, this is not the one that I had an issue with, to be honest with you. I mean, it wasn't the right result, in my opinion, but it wasn't absolutely egregious, I guess is probably the way I'd put it. Like, you could find, you can sort of craft a argument, an argument for Markakis for Gold Glove. Silver Slugger, I don't think you can, but what did you make of the defense one before we get to the offense one?
So this just speaks to my general problem with, like, the position awards as it stands in the today's game in general. What happens right now is, if you're really good defensively, what often happens is they try to get, they move you around position wise to, like, whether it be play matchups or it basically, if you're a top tier player in a lot of cases, not all cases, but in a lot of cases, you're not in a set position and you rotate through the outfield. You can take a look at what Christian Yelich was in, with Milwaukee this year. He played innings in right. He played innings in left. They wanted his bat in the lineup, and he played really well defensively. And you can play him anywhere, and you can feel good about it. And then you have other situations where, like, you know, utility guys that have been played, whether it be Javier Baez, you know, again, Yelich. There's other guys who have played in multiple positions around the diamond, and sometimes these position awards acknowledge that. And it, like, in the case of J.D. Martinez, he won 2 Silver Sluggers awards despite the fact that he was a DH. Yeah. You know what I mean? But he played enough games in the outfield that, for whatever reason, they gave him both the Silver Slugger for the DH as well as the outfield, which drives me crazy, because if you're either you reward someone who sticks with a specific position like Nick Markakis, that makes some – I'm with you. It makes sense to me. I thought he had a good defensive year. I don't think he was, like, particularly awesome, but I didn't think anyone in right field was particularly awesome.
He was fine. I mean, yeah, it wasn't like – You know, he's not spectacular at all. Like, I think if you think Gold Glove in your head, this is not the guy you see defensively. But he also was better this year, and there wasn't an obvious candidate.
Exactly, there was not one. I'm fine with it, especially when you have guys that are, you know, again, that rotate back and forth. If Christian Yelich was in right field for as many innings as Nick Markakis, that award is not even remotely close.
Correct.
You know what
same,
I mean?
Same with Hayward, by the way. If Hayward plays every single day in right field, he is leaps and bounds better defensively than Markakis. That's just the way it is.
Exactly. But the way that, so what should these awards be? Should it be rewarding the best defenders overall, whether that be outfielders, infielders, just like these are the top 5 defenders, period? Or do we do it on a position by position basis? I don't actually have a great answer to that question. And the same thing goes for Silver Slugger, because again, in the case of Silver Slugger, there was, like, Bryce Harper and Brendan Nimmo were legitimately better hitters in almost every way other than if you look strictly at just batting average.
Yeah, I mean, Silver Slugger is also outfield. It's not left center and right, so that actually opens things up. The argument against doing that for Gold Glove is that if you do that, it's going to be center fielders that win pretty much every time. Sure. So that's the argument against doing that for that. But Silver Slugger, as we transition to that a little bit, it was not left center right where you're going against a smaller group of people. You're playing against every outfielder in the National League, which makes this even crazier. Like, I am firmly on record that Markakis winning the Silver Slugger is much, much worse than the Gold Glove. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. There's not a number that you can look at where he is a top 3 hitter in the National League in the outfield. Like, that one's absolutely insane to me. I won't even hold back on that. But it's worth pointing out, as you mentioned, that, you know, there is some wiggle room with Gold Glove and, like, the position stuff. You can argue against it because the guy's playing different spots. Silver Slugger, that there isn't that cover, because it's just the 3 best outfield hitters. That's the way that they do it. It's not left center and right.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny because you can pick Bryce Harper and you could pick Brendan Nimmo. I mean, there's other guys. I mean, like, we have the top 2, the guys who are going to finish top 2 in the Rookie of the Year race this year would be better choices on a rate basis than Nick Markakis. They were worth valuable at the plate in those plate appearances, they're significantly less plate appearances than Nick Markakis was all year. And that's frustrating when you're trying to understand what they're trying to get at, what the purpose of these awards are, what are you rewarding, and what are voters and those who are deciding these things looking at? Are you looking at a guy who played 162 games and the overall contribution? Are you looking at a guy who you just thought was the best hitter and he happened to play these 2 different positions? And it seems to be all over the place, and it's frustrating because you want to reward – ultimately what the purpose of these awards are is to reward the best players. Like, end of conversation.
Right.
Not like with a bunch of weird caveats that you have to, like, well, the reason why he won the Gold Glove this year is because he won 162 – he played at shortstop 162 games. Like, with Gold Glove, it's supposed to be the best defensive player, but what we saw – when Andrelton lost it when he was here, is it had nothing to do with his defensive metrics, because he was the best defensive player in the league that year. Not just
sure.
Shortstop, like the entire
defense.
but because he didn't hit as many home runs as Brendan Crawford, Brendan Crawford won the Gold Glove. And it's hard for me. It's hard to parse, and it's hard for me to make make anything and to feel any attachment to these awards. And that's how I felt about it, is when these awards got announced, I just didn't care. And that's not a place you want to put your fan base in, is when, like, you know, these awards get announced, like, oh, well, that's silly. That screwed that up. I'm happy that you know, in the case of, you know, Mark Aikens, he was recognized by his peers and things like that. And that has value, especially for that player. But what the purpose of these awards are is to try to recognize the most talented and the best players in the league. And they consistently have failed to do so. They get the obvious ones right, but then the ones that are like a little bit closer, you know, they get those wrong. They get those in ways I would feel wrong. And then they get, you know, some things they just miss the boat on completely. And it's hard to understand.
Yeah. I mean, the Gold Gloves, I think if you talk to people, I know you and I do this often, people that cover the sport daily, the Gold Gloves are kind of a joke and have been for a while. Like, everyone wants to talk about how fielding double awards are the ones. Yeah, Palmeiro. I mean, there's all kinds of instances where guys have, like, comically won Gold Glove awards in the last decade plus. So it's like that, I understand, is the famous award for fielding, but that's kind of in the people that cover this daily, Gold Gloves are kind of known as something that people kind of ignore now because it's just bad for the most part. Silver Slugger is kind of the only one like it, at least that's of a high profile nature, which is why it's even weirder. By the way, I mean, you mentioned a couple of candidates who clearly had better seasons at the plate than Markakis, Harper, Brandon Nimmo, Acuna, Juan Soto, just to name four. There was even more than that. Here are the rankings for Markakis in terms of a couple of different stats, and I'll use some advanced ones and some not advanced ones for people that don't like advanced stats. He was 17th in WRC Plus among outfielders in the National League. 17th. WRC Plus is supposed to measure overall offensive impact. He was 17th. This is an award that was given to three people. 17th. He was 6th in on-base percentage. He was 6th in batting average. 16th in slugging percentage of unqualified hitters. And 36th in home runs in the outfield. Obviously, we talked a lot about how he was basically very ordinary after the first 5 weeks of the season. It all counts, but it wasn't like it was a consistency award for him, because it wasn't like he went out and posted a 115 WRC plus in every single month all year long. He was good for 5 weeks. He had one more nice run in the middle, but it was, aside from that, not particularly great. So all those things, I mean, I understand the arguments against Acuna and Soto because of their small sample size. If you want to at least put that argument out there, I don't buy it, but I understand it. Harper and Nimmo, it wasn't particularly close, honestly. It's basically Harper, the argument against him would be that he disappointed, but his disappointment is still far more valuable than Markakis at the plate. You know, he had like almost 400 OBP and a much higher slugging, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't want to get like too deep into the weeds, but there just wasn't an argument for Markakis to win Silver Slugger. I mean, I wish it was different. I wish he had kept that pace from the first 5 weeks and we were having this discussion in a real way. Like, if it had been close, we wouldn't be harping on it, but it really wasn't close. And, you know, credit to him, who obviously, we said this before, this was definitely the best year of his 4 years in Atlanta, and he should get all kinds of credit for the way that he performed this year. He was a solid player, whereas before the season, we were skeptical that he would even keep his job. That was never in doubt throughout the season, so shouts to him. He performed very, very well, but there was no justification for this award, if we're honest.
And you don't necessarily get to cover yourself by a small sample size with Acuna and Soto when you also give J.D. Martinez two Silver Slugger awards.
And by the way, he wasn't the only, like, there were a couple of other egregious ones. That was one that was weird.
That's the one that really sticks out to me, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I mean, Salvador Perez winning for the American League catchers was comical. Like, he had a below 100 WRC plus. There were a few different ones. It wasn't just Markakis, but he was the one that got the most national pub. Even outside of, I think people think that it was just us or people like us picking this apart. National writers were jumping on this immediately. I remember Dan Zaborski was kind of like, what is happening here? Like, yeah. There were people that cover the league that are not just Braves people that were making note of the fact that this is kind of a interesting is the nice way to put it, choice. But, you know, credit to him. Again, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Markakis. All that said, he shouldn't have won it, but, you know, he was better than we ever thought he was going to be this year. And I guess I'll say that once again, just to give myself some cover, just because I know we're going to hear about this from people that like him. I understand that. He didn't deserve this award.
I agree. And I think the bigger takeaway for me wasn't that, like, you know, like, I'm like outraged that Nick Markakis won an award, because that's not the point. It just makes me feel like I don't understand what information I'm getting from someone winning this award. And it makes me not care about it.
We would do the same thing, by the way, if Freeman had won. I mean, his was closer, to be honest with you. Him and Goldschmidt were closer. But if, pick a guy that we like a lot and that people don't think that we're too low on. Like, if it was Ozzy or Freddie or whoever, and they won an award they didn't deserve, we would talk about it.
Yep.
Like, we talked about Ender. We talked about Freeman. like, you know, we would talk about it. It has nothing to do with Markakis. It's just that's the particular example of what happened. But if they had given the goal, if they had given a Silver Slugger to Freeman in a year that he didn't deserve it, we would say he didn't deserve it. So it's not about Markakis. It's just the system is kind of weird, and this was a bad result.
Yeah, and again, it just makes me dislike the awards, because again, if Freddie Freeman had beaten out Gopal Goldschmidt this year, I mean that I agree with you, that race was closer, but Goldschmidt,
it would have been the
wrong
choice.
Yeah, he was Goldschmidt was the better hitter. Freeman was I feel strongly that Freeman was by far the better defensive player, and if it was an overall award, that's a different conversation. But
agree.
Again, what we're trying to measure and what we're trying to say with these awards and what they mean, that matters. And if you're not going to get it close, then I'm not sure why I care. You know what I mean? I'll just keep looking at the numbers that I choose to look at and make the best assumptions that I know how to, rather than saying, well, this guy's won 3 Silver Sluggers, because I look at the results, not just in Markakis, but, you know, again, Salvador Perez, the J.D. Martinez stuff and all that stuff. It's not that J.D. Martinez is a bad hitter. I just don't think he necessarily should win 2 Silver Sluggers, because it doesn't make sense to me as how other things were done. And it's a frustrating kind of thing because people, you know, want to tweet at us and make us care about the result, when ultimately all it tells us is that the way in which these awards are handed out, especially in the way in which today's game is kind of handled and all that, doesn't square up with what everything tells us. And that's the more frustrating for me, is because I was wish that the awards, there's a better way for it to do it. I don't have a lot of great answers there, but in terms of like how they should do it and all that other stuff, because ultimately a lot of this is kind of the result of voters doing things and what guidelines they're given and what those voters care about. That both matters, because, you know, you want to be recognized by your peers, but also at the same time, you know, I wish they would get a little bit closer to being correct.
Yeah, last thing on this, Freeman, we mentioned this a second ago, but just for people, you know, I guess, record-keeping-wise, Freeman was the only other guy who had, like, even a legitimate claim. He lost to Goldschmidt. I think Acuna was the only other player. Like, Acuna probably should have won over Markakis if they were to pick a Brave, to be honest with you. But nobody else really had a case among Braves. I know Camargo was very good, but he was not close to Arenado, I believe. Did Arenado win? I believe he did. Whoever won third base, it was not particularly close. So the only other guy who, like, could have won it was Freeman, and he wasn't going to win it over Goldschmidt, at least justifiably. So let's move on from there. A couple more notes to hit on before we get out of here on a probably was going to be at least a partly shortened episode. Luis Gajara is apparently down 35 pounds and already working out in Orlando, when some positive momentum there from a story that was out there this week. I'm not sure what to take from this other than it's a good thing that he's in shape, because that was something that we all worried about, was that, you know, his body type kind of is what it is, but he was bigger than he needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, and he had a terrible offseason, and it's not simply just he didn't work hard enough. I mean, he had a lot of family issues going on in this past offseason, and it's kind of hard to keep your mind on, you know, staying in shape athletically when you're just trying to make sure that your family life, you know, is what you are wanting it to be, and, you know, having to take care of people and all that other stuff. And he's really struggled with that all year. You know, he got injured in spring training, which that messed up his conditioning too. He didn't really get back into shape, and then when he did come back, he had a lot of issues in terms of, like, you know, getting his mechanics right and being super rusty when he was in Gwinnett. And then, you know, towards the end of the year, he was dealing with kind of some shoulder soreness and things like that. And you kind of, at the end of the season, you kind of wonder, like, what is going to happen with Gohara? I mean, can he regain what we thought he could be, or is this kind of one of those sad cases where, you know, things that weren't necessarily in his control kind of resulted in his career being derailed? But it looks like he's staying stateside to stay in shape, get healthy again. Losing 35 pounds in that amount of time is no joke. He's still a very big guy. So I'm sure that's going to be something that they're going to be continuing to kind of work on and kind of getting him healthy and keeping him motivated. But the guy has really good stuff, and it's a really unfortunate situation with his family, you know, having deaths in the family and illnesses in the family, in a family that's so far away in Brazil. I feel for the guy, and I think it speaks to him willing to stay stateside, get in shape, and try to get right. You know, losing 35 pounds wasn't the answer to his issues. There's a lot of things that he has to work out, but that he's putting in that time and wanting to get better and to get really healthy, that really does matter. And I'm hopeful that he can come back, because when he comes back, you know, at the very least, he's a guy in the bullpen that, you know, can, like, blow guys away and has a really good slider that can, like, do some damage. And he's still a starting pitching prospect too. So, you know, if he's getting healthy, and, you know, he could be right in the thick of things in spring training, especially if he's working extra hard and he looks really good in spring training. I mean, his is the kind of stuff that will, like, stand out to a Braves staff. They'll be like, well, we need to have this guy pitching for us. Go ahead.
He has a great arm. I mean, that's something, I know you're saying that. I mean, he was bad this year, but he has a really, really good arm. There's no question about it. And by the way, he's only 22. Like, he turns 23 in July. Like, this is a guy who is still obscenely young. Like, he came up very, very, very early, but one very weird year, and as you mentioned, the off-field stuff, like, one bad, weird year does not mean that he's just now done. And I think Gohara's, like, faded completely off of a lot of people's radars. That would not be wise. Like, it may not work, but the talent is still there, and if he suddenly bounces back to where he was in, like, 2016-17, I wouldn't be surprised by that. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily just full-on project it, because we just don't know what's happening there to the full extent. But, you know, one bad year isn't going to, like, tell me that he is now just not a thing anymore, because he's still so young. If he was 25, I would be a little bit more worried, but he's not even 23 yet, and he won't be for a while. He'll pitch most of the season at 22. That's a very, very intriguing piece, even though he's kind of faded away.
Yeah, and again, you give a guy a pass on a lot. I mean, it wasn't simply as just, you know, he was homesick, or, you know, he had some maturity issues. This was real family stuff. And he, and family that's far away, that was in a family situation that was like a particularly serious, and it's kind of like things kept happening over and over again. And you give a guy a pass for that, because I think we've all been in situations where, you know, we have real life situations where, like, you can't imagine doing your job where you're just, like, you know, sitting in a cubicle, or, you know, doing a job where, like, no one's watching you. And this is a guy that's, like, you know, like, thousands of people want to know what's going on with you at all times. Like, doing all that, dealing with all that under a microscope like that, like, that's going to have its effects. And I'm certainly keeping an eye on him, because, again, I've seen the arm talent. It's real. You want to see him committed to, you know, getting healthy and being right, and it looks like he is that right now. So he's kind of one of the guys that has me more excited. I'm more excited to see going into 2019.
Yeah, I still buy the talent, so we'll see what happens there. Two more things to hit on. The Braves hired Mike Fast, who is a former Astros. I believe it was director of research and development for the Astros for the last 5-6 seasons. Yep. He'll be the special assistant to the GM. That's an interesting title for him, but someone who's at one point was, like, kind of a big name in front office circles, also was a writer previously at Baseball Prospectus before he got into front offices. This is someone I don't know that much about, other than just knowing the name. Even when they hired him, I was like, oh, Mike Fast is kind of a big deal and definitely an analytically inclined individual. I'm not sure what your reaction was, but just blindly, I don't know the man, but I was intrigued, and I would say positively so with that hire.
In terms of, like, directing analytical efforts for an organization, Mike Fast is one of the guys that you absolutely want, and that the Braves actually got him. I'm, like, genuinely surprised by and happy about. The title of special assistant is a little bit interesting, because I don't know if the Braves necessarily have, like, a director of research and development type. They certainly have an analytics department, right? What I think is going to happen is that, you know, Fast is going to be kind of the guy, like, this is the kind of information that we need to be gathering. And then once we get that, I'll be translating that into giving advice on what our personnel decisions should be, and kind of, like, relaying that information in a way that makes sense both to, like, people in the front office, whether it be Alex Anthopoulos or others, or kind of directing that traffic in terms of taking the information that, look, this is the information we need. I know this is the information that we need, and these are kind of the approaches we need to get. Once we get that information, that information can then be relayed into, these are the reasons why we need to get this player, that player, or maybe this player needs to get less playing time. It's kind of like that translation role, that kind of advisor, you know, based on what this is telling us, this is what we should be doing, rather than simply just directing analytical efforts and then kind of generating reports and hoping they get read. I think it's kind of more having the ear of a general manager, and his work with the Astros legitimately was great. The Astros have lost two guys in their analytical departments that are really, really good. And it'll be interesting to see kind of what the effects of that are down the road, because, I mean, Mike Fast in particular is a very highly respected analyst, and it kind of makes the Braves analytical department, kind of puts them into that more top third to even better tier in all of baseball.
Yeah. I mean, I won't claim to know every inner working of the front office, but just encouraged to have someone like that with that kind of pedigree, with that kind of reputation in the front office is a good thing, like, sort of unequivocally. He's not, like, making all the decisions, but he'll be there, and he'll be a voice and a very informed one for Anthopoulos, which I enjoy. More sport people is a good thing. Last bit of news, Dansby Swanson had a minor wrist surgery this week, which is a little bit interesting. I didn't know that was going to happen. It was to remove a loose body in his wrist. He'll be apparently ready, per Mark Bowman, for spring training. Dansby without getting too deep into it, obviously was a little bit better in 2018 than he was in 2017, but still not a great hitter on the whole. Has some nice moments. His defense was awesome this year, but offensively, he still has a ways to go to be kind of where the Braves hoping he would be. But does this worry you at all about 2019? I know it's kind of tough to do without being a doctor or someone with all the information, but you don't love to hear a wrist stuff just because the wrists are very important to hitting.
Well, yeah, I mean, Swanson's had issues, I think, with wrists twice now. Once was in spring training, not this past year, but the year before, and then once this past year when he, like, hurt it on his swing. And it almost gives me more optimism for 2019 because part of me has to wonder, like, I know the guy is talented, and there's enough people who thought he was talented. Like, why would he be this, you know, have these many issues at the plate? So you hope that maybe, like, this procedure will kind of, like, keep his wrist from – like, if there's a loose body that's kind of causing things to get irritated, make his wrist sore, maybe, you know, his swing will be improved and he won't be as – won't have as many stretches where he's uncomfortable. The issues that Dansby has are ultimately – a lot of them are approach-oriented and kind of how he deals with pitches on the outside of the plate and what he's supposed to be doing and all that stuff. And maybe, you know, getting his wrist completely healthy will help him. I am hopeful that that is a net positive. But when everyone gets cut into and something happens, there's always a risk that the result is that they are not as good as you would hope they would be after the fact. Because, I mean, surgical procedures, I mean, regardless of how minor, I mean, that's you're doing something to your body that was not done beforehand. So, you know, you have to deal with scar tissue, you have to deal with a rehab, and you have to deal with kind of your body kind of adjusting to, you know, what was done to it. So, again, I'm not saying anything about that. I think he'll be ready for spring training, but ultimately what he looks like when he comes back, I am hopeful and cautiously optimistic this is a net positive. How much of a net positive that is a completely different question.
It's certainly possible that he needed this to happen for him to be 100%, and maybe he wasn't at times this year. But what you said is important about how procedures are rarely good. I mean, there's just always risk to some degree, even the minor stuff. So, I mean, we'll obviously be monitoring him now in February and March in a little bit different way than we would have been before. You know, it's worth noting that he was still a two-win player this year, even with his stuff at the plate, because he was so good defensively at a premium position. But I do think that, you know, the Braves understand that for them to get where they want to go, they need more than 80 WRC plus from Dansby Swanson. I think he's got more talent than that. We kind of all think that. I'm not sure where the ceiling is. It's definitely lower than we thought it was going to be, I would imagine. But we'll see with Swanson. I think if he was a league average bat, he'd be a 4-win player. That's how good his defense is. Like, just be league average, Dansby at the plate. That's all we need. That's all the Braves want or probably need from Swanson is league average bat.
Just hit 260, you know, occasional home runs and things like that, and, you know, draw some walks, do some things on the bases, and we're fine.
Yeah, that glove can cure a lot of ills at shortstop, to be sure, especially when you factor in speed and all that different stuff. He does a lot of things well, and hopefully hitting will be added to that list in 2019. And that's kind of it in terms of news. I mean, we could probably go a little bit deeper, but we'll both have to run fairly soon here. I guess Ronald Acuna is playing baseball right now. It doesn't count, but I'm sure you're monitoring him considering your love affair with Ronald Acuna.
Well, yeah, you know, if there's a prospect playing somewhere, I mean, Arizona Fall League's going on too. Ronald Acuna is playing over in Japan with the, you know, kind of that exhibition that MLB does. Not every year, but they do quite a bit. He's playing well. It seems like he's having a lot of fun over there too. They're doing a lot of not just exhibition games, but they're also like doing a lot of things with, like, you know, like baseball developmental leagues and, you know, kids and stuff over there. It's just kind of good to see him, but kind of embracing kind of that baseball ambassadorship role. You know what I mean? He's a really fun guy to watch. Externally, just how good he is. Like, he's always smiling, always having fun out there. He's a really engaging personality. So in terms of, like, the results, I couldn't care less about that just because, I mean, they're playing against a competition that they'll never see again, and it's significantly worse than what they've seen for, you know, 162 games this year. But it's good to kind of see him both performing well, because, again, you want to see him, you know, he's getting hits. He's, you know, he's causing havoc on the base paths, but more importantly, like, he's having fun and he's kind of being a face of the game that is going to be ultimately good. Is going to be good for his marketability long term as well, because both not just in the United States, but, I mean, you know, Japan has a really big baseball culture, and if you can kind of get a fan base going over there, that's all it's going to do is help you. And he seems to be enjoying himself and reveling in it.
He's good at baseball. Breaking news: yes. Ronald Acuna is good at baseball. Entertaining to watch, and if you can find a stream, I'm not sure where it is, but if you can find a stream, there's some baseball happening, Fall League and Japan, and I'm not watching a lot of baseball right now. I'm not watching any baseball right now, if I'm being honest. But this is where Eric can save you by talking about baseball and fall league stuff. I know we're covering that weekly at Talking Chop, I believe.
Yep, that went up today. Yeah.
There you go. So please go read that if you have not read that already on this fine Sunday. There's stuff happening there as well. But you know, I mean, Eric, plug yourself, my friend. There's a lot going on, including your national stuff, where I know you're very busy with free agency, even if the Braves aren't.
Yeah, it's been kind of wild. You can find my work on Talking Chop. We had the Arizona Fall League recap go up today. Christian Pache is doing reasonably well. The pitchers are doing reasonably well. If your name isn't Jeremy Walker, and the hitters, I mean, honestly, everyone's doing pretty well. No one's lighting up the Arizona Fall League like we've seen in some years. But everyone's doing reasonably well over there. It's a long season, so you don't really want to draw too many conclusions from all that. But you can find all that information there. My work over on MLB Daily Dish is increasingly busy because basically, if there's a trade rumor or a move or anything like that, we cover it. So you can follow our work over there. We're going to be doing free agency and offseason previews for all the teams. We're going to, you know, as moves come out, we're going to be kind of doing some, you know, a little bit of retrospective type stuff as well. So you can find there's going to be a lot of things going on. And more importantly, you know, between the rookie year announcement, which Ronald Acuña is probably favored to win at this point, and Mike and the manager of the year awards this week, Brian Snicker is certainly one of the favorites to win that. Craig Counsell is going to have an interesting argument with his work with the Brewers, I think as well, but those are kind of the newsworthy things that we're sure of, but we also feel pretty strongly in the next couple weeks we're going to see moves out of the Braves, and they're going to kind of choose
something
the path.
Will happen almost certainly.
Yeah, one of the big moves I feel pretty confident will happen before the month of November ends, because I don't think they're going to wait until the winter meetings. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on. And as we move out away from the kind of winter meetings, you know, that trade rumor stuff in the month of December, we still have to kind of suss out when it's going to be prospect list time again. And we're going to be kind of sorting that out, and we'll announce when we're going to roll that out and all that stuff. So, you know, between the two sites, I stay very busy, as well as, you know, having a family and, you know, getting enlisted by Brad to come on podcasts. So
sorry, Eric.
No, I love hearing from Brad. I always like talking about baseball with him. He's like one of my buddies in baseball. I'm like, I'm always in. I always try to find a way to make it work. But yeah, there's a lot of work that's going to be going on this off season, probably more than we've had in any off season since I've been here. So yeah, you just, you know, make sure you're reading the sites and, you know, keep tweeting at us. You know, Brad loves your trade proposals regardless of the sport, so make sure you keep sending those to him too.
Yes, please send all trade proposals through me. Of course, I am responsible for the front office. I think I know Eric gets these too. Like, people don't think that we make decisions. They're always fun. But alas, here we are. Please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or where you like to listen to pods. If we're not there, please tell me and I'll try to get us there. But that's very important. So please leave good feedback. If you enjoy the podcast, tell your friends as well. That's can be very important. And as Eric mentioned, read Talking Chop, read MLB Daily Dish, read all those places. Follow us on Twitter. Follow Eric and follow me if you want to hear about basketball most of the time. But there is some baseball every once in a while in there right now. And if nothing else, we'll be back again next week. I'm planning to take the week of Thanksgiving off. But that means that the Braves will make a trade, I'm sure, on like the Friday before the Friday after Thanksgiving. So I say that now, and if something happens, I'll still be here. But this week, we will have a podcast on the 18th, so please stay tuned for that. Thank you, Eric, and we'll see everybody else next week.